10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs and the small dogs who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And welcome to our new Wednesday show, The Rest of the West. We are your hosts. I am Matthew Stanley at Bolt Fan in Denver on Twitter, and my co-host, Michael.
What's going on, guys? This is Michael Peterson again. You can find me at Zone Tracks on the Twitter sphere.
And our show, Rest of the West, will be a weekly show on Wednesdays where we will talk about the rest of the AFC West. We kind of looked around and saw that there was kind of a gap in coverage, keeping everybody up to date with the rest of the AFC West. And if you guys are like me, you know, you probably don't want to go listen to like a Chiefs podcast or a Raiders podcast or a Broncos podcast, because obviously they're going to hype up their own team and just talk crap about the Chargers the whole time. So we are here to fill you in. And obviously this week it's a little more relevant than most of the weeks because the Chargers played the Chiefs this week. So on weeks where we play the other teams in the AFC West, we're going to start out with a little bit of a game recap because obviously, you know, the other team, one of the other teams was one of those AFC West teams. So Michael, why don't you go ahead and start it off and start giving us some of your thoughts on the game?
Man, I actually got tasked with writing the recap for the game. And if you guys don't know what that's like, or if you've ever written a recap for any sort of sports game, you kind of write it during the game. And when anything significant happens, you type it up real quick. And so when the actual game's over, you throw on the beginning, the introduction, then you throw on the conclusion and you're able to put it in right away. But for this game, man, as much as I wanted to write a very unbiased, you know, professional article, it was so tough because first there was the punt return. Second, there was the long slant to Tyreek Hill. And when the score became 14-3 within the first 5 minutes of the game, it was so hard not to just start typing my real feelings about the game, you know, and as a fan, that's tough to just do a very unbiased, trying to keep a professional article. So, but in general, the game obviously wasn't what we thought or hoped it was going to be. Sky high expectations. You can't have the highs without the low lows. So with sky high expectations, we had bottom of the barrel, low emotions and feelings about the game. Honestly, Andy Reid just outcoached the hell out of the Chargers. He's been a mad genius when he has plenty of time to prepare for a team. And he had an entire offseason to figure out this year's Chargers. And what he did realize is that the defense was pretty much the same old Chargers. And he exploited them through and through, utilized his players with their best traits, whether it's Tyreek Hill and DeAnthony Thomas and their speed, whether it's Pat Mahomes' rocket arm. He knew the weaknesses in and out of the defense and just exploited the living crap out of them. The game was obviously closer than it probably was, really 38-28. You know, again, it could have been a one-score game, could have been even closer if Caleb Sturgis would have made that field goal at the end. But it is what it is, and unfortunately, we didn't get to walk away with that real big first win over the Chiefs in 4 years to start what should be a promising 2018 season.
Yeah, and actually, it's kind of a double whammy, because even though the Raiders also lost, and obviously we'll get to the Raiders here in a little bit, the Chargers' loss was to a division opponent. So the Chargers are now sitting at the bottom of the AFC West after the first week. And obviously, it's still early, but yeah, that was a pretty embarrassing loss for the Chargers, mostly just because it was so obvious that they got just completely outcoached. The Chargers did not have a good game plan on offense or defense. I mean, when you look at this Chiefs defense, they are just, you know, they're ripe for the picking in the secondary. They don't have good corners. Their safeties are only okay. And I mean, Rivers did throw for 424 yards, but mm-hmm. I mean, he easily could have gone over 500. Not, I mean, the Chargers wide receivers dropped a bunch, but the game plan just, I thought was, it wasn't great. I mean, the only reason they actually did pass as much as they did is because they were playing from behind so much. At the beginning of the game, it was really obvious that they wanted to try and heavily feature the run, because it was back to the old Ken Wisenhunt special of, you know, mixing in a lot of runs on first down, a lot of runs on second down, and then trying to make up the first down on third down with a long pass. So I just didn't think the offensive game plan was good, and the defensive game plan was even worse. Gus Bradley has the worst habit of trying to cover wide receivers out of the slot with a linebacker and then trying to throw safety help over the top. And when that linebacker is Kyle Emmanuel and that safety over the top is Jahlil Adai, Tyreek Hill is going to be open 9 out of 10 times. It was a recipe for failure, and Andy Reid knew it was coming because Gus Bradley's been doing it for years. I mean, when I was tweeting, I was in control of the Bolts from the Blue Twitter account during the game. And when I mentioned that Gus had linebackers covering the slot wide receiver, which was Tyreek Hill a lot, I had Jaguars fans jumping in my mentions, just basically saying like, thank God he's not our problem anymore. And yeah, that sounds about right. Because this has just been his MO since he's been a defensive coordinator. That's just what he does. And so because it's so obvious, good coaches like Andy Reid are able to take advantage of it. So, I mean, this was a very beatable Chiefs team, in my opinion, with what the Chargers have talent-wise. And they just simply got out-coached. And then, like, reason 1A they lost is they got out-coached. And reason 1B is they too many people didn't do their jobs.
No, and you're definitely correct. And really, really stressing the concept that Andy Reid truly outcoached Anthony Lynn and his staff in this entire game is the fact that the Chiefs didn't need their best players to win this game. Obviously, Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes went off and both had a hell of a game. But you look at the rest of their weapons, because they do have a plethora of weapons on offense. You look at Travis Kelce. He had one catch for 6 yards. You look at Sammy Watkins, who they went and got this offseason to be a nice complimentary receiver for Tyreek Hill from a former first round pick, kind of had a little bit of a resurgence with the Los Angeles Rams last year. They picked him up and he only had 3 catches for, I think, 44 yards or something along those lines.
It was only 21 yards.
Okay, 21 yards. I don't know where I'm getting that number possibly, but I knew that was kind of high anyway. So let's call it 21 yards. Okay, not much at all. And then you have Kareem Hunt, who was kind of the bane of the Chargers' existence when they played the Chiefs last season in their two matchups. He rushed for over 300-plus yards. He caught some balls through the air, and he was almost a one-man wrecking crew against the Chargers. Kareem Hunt only carried the rock 16 times, or he carried the rock 16 times for only, I think, believe it was 43 yards or 46 yards, which is phenomenal when you think about the how the Chargers run defense was looked down upon as one of the worst units in the league, and it is still, I believe, one of the worst units in the league, but it did show some improvement. I think it's one of the bigger silver linings that a lot of people aren't talking about, but maybe it's because they didn't need the run to beat us. But again, to my main point, their best players were not used. One of their best players was used, essentially, and that's almost all they needed. I mean, for crying out loud, DeAnthony Thomas scored a touchdown. DeAnthony Thomas was this amazing college football player, and he even got a score in on this game. I mean, the scores came from every other way you could possibly imagine, but none of the ways that we expected.
Really is simple how the Chargers lost. They got out-coached, and they didn't there was too many people that didn't perform. So, I mean, what's nice is it's early in the season. Yes, we haven't seen these coaches have the ability to make massive game plan changes or adjustments, but the opportunity is there for coaching adjustments to happen, and the opportunity is there for these players to step up and actually do their jobs. So, luckily, that this embarrassing loss, hopefully, it was kind of like a smack in the face to the team and wake them up. And wake up this coaching staff and hopefully everyone now. I mean, Anthony Lynn's whole big thing when he came to the team was accountability, holding himself accountable, holding the players accountable. Well, hopefully there's a lot of accountability being passed out in the meeting rooms early this week. And starting tomorrow at practice, they can start fixing this because if they can get the ship righted in a hurry, they still have a really good shot to win the AFC West and go to the playoffs. But there are some things that need corrected right away, or this is going to get off course really fast.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. It is still far too early to make all the assumptions in the world that Chargers fans would want to make right now. There's still so much time for things to happen, and a lot of crazier things have happened in the last couple of years. So before we head on to the Broncos section of this, real question, right quick. Do you think Joey Bosa would have had an impact on this game enough so that maybe it may have changed the outcome? Or just talk about what do you think probably would have changed if Bosa did suit up against the Chiefs?
So I think one thing Bosa does really well is, so I think two things he brings would have made a pretty big impact in this game. One, he plays with pretty good awareness. He's pretty good at setting the edge, and he keeps his eyes upfield. And so I think he would have been able to contain Patrick Mahomes a little better, because even on the couple of plays where they did get some pressure, Patrick Mahomes was able to move well, keep his eyes downfield, and and make a pass, make a play. I think that would have been lessened. And two is Melvin Ingram basically got reverted back to his old Mr. Almost self, where he didn't quite make any real plays. I mean, he got some pressures and he definitely kind of impacted the game a little bit, but he didn't have any splash plays. He didn't come away with a sack. And it's because he was the only real threat on that defensive line for the whole game. If you add Joey Bosa in there, the offensive line has a lot more to worry about. And maybe Melvin Ingram gets freed up for a sack or two in there and makes a difference. I also think Joey would have been really big on creating a little more havoc in the backfield faster, so that some of these read option plays, some of these triple option plays, wouldn't have time for the options to, get fully investigated, basically. So like they wouldn't have had time to run that triple option four times, four different ways and get two scores off of basically the same play. I think he would have impacted the game. Do I think it would have been enough to win? I don't think so. I think they probably would have been one touchdown closer to winning, but the coaching from the coaching aspect, the game plan on the Chiefs side was just much better. And Joey Bosa playing isn't going to make Travis Benjamin and Tyrell Williams catch those passes.
No, and I definitely agree. Joey Bosa is just one man, and one man does not a team make. But I think it'd be naive to think that he wouldn't have had some sort of an impact. And we talked about it on our Saturday show on the Almost Game Day podcast, that without Joey Bosa, the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line is able to shift over and max protect and give extra help to that side to handle Ingram. Because Rochelle, honestly, although he's made some strides, the Kansas City Chiefs right tackle, Mitchell Schwartz, is a very good right tackle. He doesn't get a lot of publicity, and he's not the most athletic guy in the world, but he knows how to do his job well. And if you think about it, what we really missed, because I don't know if you noticed it during the game at all or during your rewatch, but when Joey Bosa is playing, Gus Bradley can do a lot of cool things with the defensive line, and especially when he lines Melvin Ingram and Bosa up on the same side to really overload and give one half of the line fits to, honestly, it's been one of the biggest things that he does to get pressure and sacks and to devise crazy, crazy schemes. I don't think he did that with Rochelle at all, because Rochelle just is nowhere near that type of player. But yeah, you're totally correct. Bosa would have had an impact possibly in a lot of their mesh situations, the triple options, the read options and stuff that they would have done. There's no way Rochelle is as strong as Bosa. And I don't know about speed. I don't think he's as fast as Bosa either way. But just I think there would have been a lot more pressure coming from that left side of the defensive line if Bosa would have played. And we all know what real pressure can do to some quarterbacks in terms of forcing errant throws. You know, with both ends working off each other, pressuring one into the other, that sort of thing. So, no, you're very right. But let's stop this here and move on to the Broncos before we get carried away a little bit more. The Broncos were visited by the Seattle Seahawks and won 27-24. A couple surprising things about this game. Royce Freeman, the rookie running back out of Oregon, was thought to be the bell cow back. He had an extremely promising preseason. I think he scored 3 touchdowns in the 4 games that he did participate in. But the crazy thing was he rushed for the same amount of yards and got the same amount of carries as Philip Lindsay, who was an undrafted free agent running back out of local University of Colorado Boulder. And Devontae Booker, who was named the starter by John Elway to start the regular season, received 1 carry. So in terms of that Denver backfield, Stanley, what do you make of that?
So Philip Lindsay was kind of a favorite here in the preseason. He earned big points, A, not only by, you know, performing well enough to make the roster, but B, he was kind of he kind of got a little respect from here in Denver when it was announced that he made the roster. He actually called Terrell Davis to ask permission to wear number 30. And so Terrell gave him the permission and tweeted it out online saying, like, you know, thanks for asking. Definitely you can wear the number, blah, blah, blah. So he was kind of a fan favorite, but yeah, he's good. Like he's a good receiver out of the backfield too. He actually had a 29-yard touchdown reception in the game. And yeah, he's going to be a weapon for them. They've got a good little two-headed monster there in Royce Freeman and Philip Lindsay.
No, you're definitely correct. Just looking at the receiving numbers, their obvious receivers, Sanders, Thomas, they all got their stuff. Cam Sutton, the rookie out of SMU, also had 2 catches for 45 yards. But yeah, Philip Lindsay had 2 catches, 31 yards and a touchdown, including that 29-yard catch and run for the score. So what do you think going forward in terms of his backfield? What do you expect? Do you think Philip Lindsay continues to get the workload? Do you think maybe it was a game sort of flow thing that got him as many carries and touches, or do you think they really like Philip Lindsay that much to the point where it's kind of split between him and Royce Freeman?
I think it's going to be pretty evenly split. I think they bring very different things. And I think kind of like how the Chargers use Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler, they're going to find ways to get them on the field at the same time, and they're going to find ways to get them both the ball as much as possible. So I think we're definitely going to continue to see a pretty heavy rotation in their backfield, especially while Case Keenum continues to get used to this offense. They need to give him as much help as possible. So keeping the most productive and best players on the field as much as possible is the right thing to do.
All right. And just to fix myself earlier, I noted that Devontae Booker had 1 carry. He actually had 2 carries, but for only 4 yards and 2 catches for 11 yards in the passing game. But still, it looks like he is the odd man out in that Denver backfield. But going to the other part of the offense, Case Keenum, we just talked about settling into this offense. He had a pretty up and down stat line. looking at it right now, 25 of 39 for 329 yards, three touchdowns, but he threw three interceptions. Now, I didn't watch this game personally. It was on one of the TVs in the room I was in, but I was obviously paying attention to a few other games, you know, according to fantasy and watching some of my guys. But pretty up and down, looking at Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, his two top targets. They were targeted combined 21 times. They caught Sanders caught 10 of those 11 for 135 and a touchdown. Demaryius Thomas caught 6 of his 10 for 63 and a touchdown. So it looks like Case Keenum, you know, signs the three interceptions. It looks like he's getting comfortable. It looks like he has a good rapport with his two wide receivers. And it looks like these wideouts have a consistent quarterback for the first time since Peyton Manning was, you know, wearing the blue and orange. So how do you look at this receiving core and Case Keenum in general in his first year, his first game?
So Keenum did pretty well. Two of his interceptions came in the first half. And the third interception actually came at kind of a crappy time for the Broncos. Von Miller had just made a fantastic play to strip the ball away from Chris Carson on the Seahawks. He stole it from him. He literally just ran it behind him and ripped it out of his hands and started running back the other way. And then on the very next play, Case Keenum throws this interception. That wasn't great, but it looks like he does trust these wide receivers. He's getting some good timing going with them. I think he's going to continue to get better as the year goes on, and he's probably going to be the most reliable quarterback they've had in a couple seasons now. So that's obviously not ideal for the Chargers, but obviously three interceptions in one game, he is still prone to make some mistakes, and that offensive line still isn't fully up to speed. They've got some weaknesses that can be exploited, especially if Joey Bosa is back. So I think the key here is going to be getting pressure on Case Keenum and just hoping, forcing him to make a mistake.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Yeah, and I think with Keenum being a competent quarterback again for what used to be one of, if not the most dangerous receiving core in the league. I mean, when Peyton Manning was throwing these guys the ball, guys like Demaryius Thomas and Sanders were like must-haves in fantasy football. You wanted these guys. And hell, even when Eric Decker was with the Broncos, I had him one year in fantasy. I had him the year where he caught four touchdowns in a game. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. And obviously Decker is retired. He's been with a couple teams since, but Sanders is still there. Demaryius Thomas is still there. And Cam Sutton, it is Cam Sutton, right? Do you recall? I don't know why I'm having such a brain fart, but all of a sudden I'm like confused. Cortland Sutton. Oh, excuse me. I think Cam Sutton is a whole other prospect. So I apologize. It's very late as we're recording this. I wanted to make sure I got that right. Definitely wasn't sounding right when I was saying, but Cortland Sutton, he was a big, tall, physical receiver out of SMU. And they also have Deshaun Hamilton. And although Deshaun Hamilton, I don't know if he played too much, he didn't record a catch, but Hamilton was one of the best receivers in Mobile during the Senior Bowl week. And a lot of guys around, you know, draft Twitter and on social media had all the good things to say about Deshaun Hamilton. So if Deshaun Hamilton comes in and
Hamilton's definitely a hard worker. He was the one who actually made the block that sprung Philip Lindsay for that touchdown. That's on right. That 29-yard catch and run. That was all Deshaun Hamilton blocking downfield, and it was a really good block for a wide receiver.
So, yeah, there you go. And in terms of wide receivers actually being able to block, sometimes that can make all the difference. It would be, you know, between, you know, all right gains in big, big plays. So I guess the point I was getting towards is if Keenum can continue to stay competent and all of a sudden Sanders, Thomas, and Sutton start to resemble the receiving core that we were used to seeing, you know, in 2015 and 14 with the sheriff still there, It could spell trouble for the matchups this year against Denver. I know last time we faced Denver, it was a historical shutout, 21-0. I think we were at home, correct? The Chargers were at home?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So home may have played a role, but still the last time the Chargers faced Denver, we shut them out. So I'm still kind of riding that high, but in general, this group looks dangerous. If Keenum can reel back the interceptions, absolutely something to watch out for. But going on to the other side of the ball for the Broncos, Von Miller had 3 sacks and that really cool strip of Chris Carson that you just talked about a little bit earlier. I've seen videos after videos of that, which also was reminiscent of the way Khalil Mack ripped the ball out of DeShone Kizer's hands. It was almost the same exact thing. Von was incredible. And I think we're finally watching Von might be in his prime as, you know, a dominant elite player in the prime of his game. This is what it looks like. Von had 3 sacks. What'd you think of Von?
I thought he was fantastic. He forced 2 fumbles. He had 3 sacks. He had 7 tackles overall. He was just all over the field. And what's really concerning as a Chargers fan is the fact that some of the biggest question marks about the Broncos this year is how is the defense going to do, because they lost some big names. They lost Aqib Talib, and they're still trying to figure things out with their defensive coaching staff. And so what's concerning is, despite those things, their defense came out and really performed. They held the Seahawks to only 306 total yards, total net yards. They had 2 interceptions. They forced 3 fumbles. I mean, this was a defense that was shutting down the Seahawks offense. They didn't do great in scoring defense wise. They allowed 24 points, but this was a defense that was making plays. They're forcing turnovers, and they're only going to continue to get better, especially as the rookie, as Bradley Chubb gets better. I mean, he had a half sack. And so as he gets more snaps and gets more comfortable, they're just going to get more and more dangerous.
Yes, I agree. They lost some vaunted members of that no-fly zone that they had for the last couple of years prior to last season. Talib's gone, but they replace some of those guys with younger stars. Darian Stewart, Chris Harris is still there. Some people still view him as a top-5 corner. But Justin Simmons is a young guy who's really come on, and he had one of those 2 interceptions. So Simmons, one guy to keep your eye on, who looks like he's butting into another really, really good defensive back. But Pac-Man Jones had the other interception for the Denver Broncos. And Pac-Man Jones is one of those guys that I honestly forgot was still in the league. Or, you know how you remember people are still people? You kind of forget that they even exist. Pac-Man Jones was that guy for me. When I went back to look over the stats and how the Seattle-Denver game went, I saw A. Jones with an interception. And in my head, I went, who is this dude? And then I click on him and it's Adam Jones. And I go, you've got to be kidding me. So I know it was kind of a big deal when he went over to the Broncos from the Bengals in free agency. But I just didn't expect him to have much of an impact. Nonetheless, have an interception on in the first game. I thought that was pretty crazy. Adam Jones, still a thing. Moving on, we might as well get on to the Raiders, who ended up getting, I wouldn't say demolished. Demolished is the word I kept using because I felt I just really wanted it to happen. After everything Gruden's done and the direction that he seems to be taking the Raiders, I thought demolished was the right word. But they had me on the ropes. I was a little afraid. I mean, Oakland came out very strong against the Rams, but ultimately ended up losing all that momentum before the second half and ended up losing, I believe it was 33-13, I believe, was the score. And man, started hot, but again, lost it all. Penalties, 11 for 155. So no matter how good they were playing, the Raiders inevitably couldn't get out of their own way. A lot of people on Twitter were comparing them to the Chargers, you know, hashtag chargering. That's what the Raiders were doing. Can't blame them. You know, we're used to it. You're used to it. Also had 3 turnovers to Rams 0. So not the best start for Gruden and the Raiders. Tell me your thoughts on the game.
Yeah, so it's kind of like I hope this is, you know, the status quo for how things are going to go with this John Gruden coached team. Obviously, you know, you look at when you look at the box score and you see the quarter by quarter scoring, you can definitely see the tail of two different coaching staffs. So they both scored a touchdown in the first quarter. In the second quarter, the Raiders outscored the Rams 6-3, and then halftime happens and they go into the locker room and John Gruden and his staff don't really do much of anything, but Sean McVay and his good coaching staff, they go back there and they make some adjustments. And then after halftime, the Rams put up 10 points in the third quarter to the Raiders 0. And then they put up 13 more points in the fourth quarter to the Raiders second goose egg. So the Rams come out and score 23 points in the second half alone to the Raiders 0. So much like what happened to the Chargers, the Raiders got outcoached. I also think, though, that in this case, the Raiders also have a severe talent deficiency compared to the Rams. The Rams have a ton of good players. I mean, Jared Goff, I think, is a better quarterback than Derek Carr. Todd Gurley is probably the best running back in the league. And when you compare him across the aisle to Marshawn Lynch, you know, there's not really competition there. And then the receiving core is much better. The offensive line is probably not. That's probably the one area where the Raiders had a bit of an advantage, is the Raiders offensive line is very good. But then on defense, it's no competition. The Raiders do not have that good of a defense, especially when considering that John Gruden just did the best trade that for the Chargers that didn't involve the Chargers I've ever seen, trading Khalil Mack away to the Chicago Bears. It was just, they were just outmatched. And I think everybody who predicted the Raiders to be a bottom five team in the league this year are going to get proven right. I just don't see a team that's going to win more than four, maybe five games this year.
Yeah, I think that's a good benchmark for the Raiders this year in terms of wins, four or five. I'll probably take a look at the schedule just to get a better idea. But no, you're right. Four or five wins sounds just right. Let's look specifically at the offense, and then even more specifically, Derek Carr. Little up and down. Was up, down, up, and then it just kind of kept going down. He made some good throws. Usually they were only to Jared Cook, but when the Raiders went on several good drives, it seemed like they were finally getting some momentum, trying to flip the script a little bit. Derek Carr seemed to make some really, really bonehead mistakes. If I remember right, he had one of his, I believe, three interceptions. I'll double check that stat for you guys. But
yeah, it was three.
He threw one almost directly to Rams linebacker. His last name is Littleton. I've never heard of this guy before. He was one of their starters. But nonetheless, it looked like Derek, and it was an empty pocket or clean pocket, by the way. There were videos today. I was watching multiple people were putting up videos about how Derek Carr would sit in these completely clean pockets and just want to throw the ball away for some reason. And one of those happened to go right into the hands of a Rams linebacker. Absolute drive killers. I mean, I would have been so, so depressed and frustrated with Derek Carr as a quarterback, because he really did. I think he single-handedly killed two or three drives. Just not looking the best. You know, that MVP season, or like, oh, not, excuse me, not an MVP season, but I mean, he was kind of up for it. He was having a hell of a year in 2016, but last year and then beginning of this year in his first game, man, that seems like it was so long ago. But
it does. And he's definitely checking down a lot and looking for those safety net options underneath. I mean, when you look at the stat line, Jared Cook, their tight end, had nine catches for 180 yards. He was their leading receiver. So their leading receiver was their tight end. Then also with nine catches was a running back. The most catches that they had by a wide receiver was Jordy Nelson, had three catches for 23 yards. They didn't have another wide receiver with more than one catch. In fact, looking at the stat line, they only had out of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
They had nine targets to wide receivers.
Yep. And out of the eight players who caught passes, only three of them were wide receivers. So, I mean, I'm all for spreading the ball around. I think that's a good strategy. But when you only have 5 catches go to wide receivers out of your 29 completions, that's not a good day. That tells me that Derek Carr was playing scared and just checking down underneath. And you're not going to win when that happens. You're not going to win when you only complete 5 of 29 passes to wide receivers. So it looks like even though the Raiders are ahead of the Chargers in the division right now, because of the fact that they lost to an NFC opponent rather than an AFC West opponent, the Raiders are a really bad team right now. And I'm pretty confident the Chargers can pull out 2 wins against the Raiders this year.
Yeah, I believe so too. Going back to Derek Carr and his throwing tendencies. I mean, the Rams, they got Aqib Talib. They got Marcus Peters. You'd like to think the Raiders have 2 very good wide receivers in Jordy Nelson and Amari Cooper. But they look good on paper. Look a lot better on paper than they really are. Jordy Nelson's obviously enough over the age of 30 to be kind of on the back hill of things, the back 9. With Amari Cooper, struggled with the drops last year. He looked like he came into training camp in this season in much better shape. Looked like he gained some weight as well. Looked like a very intimidating receiver. But again, 1 catch for 9 yards for Cooper, 3 catches for 23 yards for Jordy Nelson. I mean, the Rams just did it to him. It was a tight end funneling defense for Jared Cook. I mean, the 1 weak position group on the Rams are their linebackers, and Jared Cook, I believe, has always been a better athlete than he has been a complete tight end, but really took advantage of this matchup. Not sure if it's sustainable, but still might be a bright spot for the Raiders in their offense, knowing they have a capable tight end. But I think his stat line is more, what's the word I'm looking for? Circumstantial than what you could really expect going forward. But let's go back to the defense real quick, kind of before we wrap this whole thing up. They miss Khalil Mack. You know, it's the greatest thing to see, greatest trade for the Chargers, not involving a Chargers player. You're very correct when you say all that stuff. There was no pass rush. And John Gruden mentioned that in his post-game conference. There was no pass rush. They couldn't get to Jared Goff. They couldn't do anything. Bruce Irvin could only do so much. They have 2 young defensive tackles that have a ton of potential in Maurice Hurst and PJ Hall. And if you recall, Maurice Hurst was arguably the best interior defensive lineman in this past year's draft class that fell to the 5th round due to a heart condition that scared a lot of teams away. PJ Hall, on the other hand, was a Division I AA defensive tackle who blocked 14 kicks in his career, which is an absolutely insane stat for an interior defensive lineman. He's also over 300 pounds and reportedly ran a 4.76 40-yard dash at his pro day. So regardless if they're going to make an impact this season, Gruden did a good job of getting some really good pieces for the future of this defense. But I still think trading Khalil Mack was by far the worst thing he could have done for the defense in the short term and long term.
I completely agree. I mean, he was probably the top 3 defensive players in the division were Von Miller, Joey Bosa, and Khalil Mack. And now Khalil Mack is gone. So that makes the Chargers' life easier. Now, the Chargers had done a very good job containing Khalil Mack in the past. I think they had only ever allowed 1 sack from Khalil Mack since he's been on the Raiders. But regardless, I mean, he's probably good to will them to a win at least once a year just by creating such crazy splash plays. And he made their whole defense better. And so, anytime a player like that leaves the division, it's going to be a good thing for your team. So I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad that they made such a poor trade. I mean, sending over the extra 2nd-round pick with him just, you know, it boggles my mind still. I don't understand what they were doing. But regardless, he's gone and the Raiders are a worse team for it. And so I'm all here for that.
We are all here for that. All right, guys. Well, that about wraps up our coverage. Oh, you want to take this, Stanley? Do you want to do this?
Well, I mean, you've been talking a lot this episode. You know,
you get to open up.
I want to say some stuff.
All right.
Okay. Next week, I'll let you open up. Yeah, okay. Thanks everybody for tuning in. It's late on Tuesday night. Michael and I are both going to go to bed now, and we'll push this out. You guys will be listening to this today on Wednesday. So we will talk to you guys again on Saturday before the Chargers game on Sunday against the Bills. Hopefully a bounce back. I mean, even though the Bills are at home, the Chargers opening line is their 7.5 point favorites this week in Buffalo. So hopefully the Chargers can use this as a, you know, a bounce back game. It's kind of like when Alabama schedules those games against like Alabama Technical Farm College or whoever they play.
Tennessee Chattanooga.
Yeah. So hopefully Apple. Chargers can get their crap together and bounce back. But yeah, thanks again for listening. Oh, and I forgot to mention, I did create a Twitter account for this show as well so that you can ask us specific questions about the other AFC West teams. That account is @RestOfTheWest. So go ahead and go follow us over there. We'll be posting episode links on that Twitter account. And that's, like I said, that's where you can ask us questions for this Wednesday show. So we will see you guys again Saturday.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form the Shutdown Fullcast.
Voltron!
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears and video games.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts or coaches making terrible decisions or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.